Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoppe, and this is part two of our discussion with integrative gynecologist Dr. Alan Orshowski, and he's also author of Healing Fibroids. In part one, we talked about estrogen dominance, which is one of the driving factors behind fibroids and other women's problems, also problems that afflict men and even children. Dr. Orshowski, tell us a little bit about natural strategies for healing fibroids. I mean, the thought in conventional medicine is if you've got fibroids, you're out of luck. You need some form of surgery, some way of taking them out, right?
Well, the practice management guidelines for the American College of OBGYN actually states that because fibroid tumors are benign, only take them out if they're a problem.
You can do like watchful waiting or observation because for the most part they're not dangerous, but they can grow and grow and grow and cause problems, right?
Well, that's the big issue, and the conventional treatment starts with watchful waiting. You wait until the size that you can remove them so that the hospital tissue committee is not going to come to you and say, why did you do the surgery?
And actually, you know, one of the bizarre practices of gynecology is that they refer to fibroids by their size according to fruit. So they'll say you have a lemon-sized fibroid, or you have an orange-sized fibroid, or you have a grapefruit-sized fibroid, almost like they're fruit ready to be plucked. You just have to wait until they reach the requisite size, and then you can go in and pluck them.
Yeah, that's true. And it's usually around an orange or a grapefruit, and then you harvest it.
Yes.
And certainly in the old days, before the advent of ultrasound, taking out a fibroid that was bigger than a 12, so we also, besides fruit, we talk about weeks of pregnancy. So a 12-week size fibroid, something equivalent to the size of a 12-week pregnancy, it would become impossible to evaluate ovaries. You could not feel a woman's ovaries if her uterus was that big. And then you run the risk of missing an ovarian tumor. So many women before ultrasound had hysterectomies just because the fibroid was 12 weeks size, or about the size of an orange or grapefruit. Since ultrasound, we could evaluate, and MRI and CAT scans and all these, you know, brand new screening techniques, imaging techniques, we could evaluate ovaries and fibroids, and we know where they are and how they're growing and all of these issues. So now watchful waiting is coming to the time when, you know, the woman is just, you know, uncomfortable because of the size, and she's having pain, and that's a symptom, so you remove them. Hormones are certainly, estrogen is certainly part of the initiation of fibroids. Hormone imbalance, you know, allowing for the onset of abnormal cells, and then some form of inflammation, some form of chronic inflammation that will then allow the fibroid to do what any autonomously growing cell will do, provide their own blood supply. So angiogenesis, which is a common term used in cancer treatments, you know, finding a way of stopping cancers from developing their own blood supply is one of the holy grails of cancer treatment. This also works for conditions like fibroids. So naturally, if we can find natural ways of reducing angiogenesis and natural ways of balancing hormones, we can at least stop fibroid growth, and we could eliminate the symptoms of fibroids and then allow for shrinkage. So that's, you know, so I don't tell patients that you're here for me to shrink your fibroid. What we do is we look for the initiating and for the sustaining events. We want to tease out the inflammatory issues so that we could reduce the angiogenesis factor. And we want to identify the hormone imbalances, and this is thyroid, adrenal, and ovarian hormones, so that we could stop the production of these abnormal cells. And most of the time, this leads to a cessation of growth of the fibroids, where women had been growing them regularly or were ready for surgery. We find that we could stop the growth, and most of the time, we could stop some of the other symptoms, especially the most difficult, which is the hemorrhaging symptoms that come from some of these fibroids. So I've had women come in from the emergency room with their third blood transfusion, you know, just looking at me as the doctor of last resort, you know, before they succumb to having their uterus removed. And very often, even in these patients who've had multiple blood transfusions and who've had several myomectomies, just removing those fibroids, we can prevent them from going back to the operating room. There are natural substances that have even been studied, good studies on green tea extract as a natural anti-angiogenesis factor. That's one of the substances we use. And curcumin from the spice turmeric actually has some very good studies showing that high doses of curcumin can actually reduce the growth of fibroids. There have been studies on things like diet. So we now see that there's been recently a major controversy in dietary advice. We've got the high-carb people on one side and the low-carb people on the other side. Well, we see that a low-carbohydrate, more of a ketogenic, higher-fat diet seems to support reduced fibroid growth as well.
It's by starving the fibroids in effect of their carbohydrate fuel.
Well, it may be that, and it may be that the carbohydrates are also increasing inflammation by creating these glycated proteins. It's another whole story. Hemoglobin A1C is something we always check. These glycated proteins are inflammatory, and it may be that the high carbohydrates are also contributing to that. But certainly there is significant research. We can go back to the Otto Warburg theory of cancer that glucose does feed cancer cells, and I would not be surprised if other growing tumor cells, autonomously growing cells, also thrive on sugar. It creates the acid environment that most of these abnormal cells will thrive in.
Another common condition that women experience is something called PCOS, and you mentioned it earlier, polycystic ovarian syndrome in connection with estrogen dominance. But this group seems to be separate and distinct. They have certain types of problems characteristically. That's a very common problem among women. Do you have an approach that addresses PCOS?
Well, the hidden piece of PCOS, like the iceberg, you only see the tip. So we only see the PCOS part in women unless you look deeper. And I will say that, most of the journals are now acknowledging the metabolic syndrome, the insulin resistance that goes along with PCOS. It's a major part of the syndrome. And again, this is contributing a major inflammatory effect in these women. The conventional treatment of PCOS, generally is determined by whether or not a woman wants to get pregnant. If she wants to get pregnant, they start with drugs like Clomid, which is a relatively safe and kind of the lowest tier reproductive endocrinology drug, and then progress to things like ovarian drilling and other kinds of invasive procedures to help a woman conceive. If a woman does not want to conceive with PCOS, the conventional treatment is birth control pills. And all that really does is Band-Aid the problem, because these young women who have irregular cycles and are this is again the watch and wait routine, they're at the beginning of their PCOS journey, kind of. It's only being indicated at that time by the irregular cycle, so conventionally putting them on birth control pills will take away the symptom.
Is there a downside to birth control pills? Because they do control symptoms for women with certain types of menstrual problems, very bothersome periods, severe mood problems. But is there a downside to simply suppressing the symptoms without addressing underlying causes?
I definitely believe so, because when you take off that Band-Aid, when the woman has decided she's ready to become pregnant, she's had done nothing for her PCOS, so she's still dealing with the same or worse hormone imbalance. She's still dealing with the same or worse metabolic syndrome, and nothing has been done for the years that she's been on birth control pills. So I don't think that it's the best way of handling things. Especially in these young girls, so 15, 16-year-old girls are being put on birth control pills. I think there's a definite deficiency in a young woman not being able to experience her own hormones and the progesterone of luteal phase. This has a lot to do with the psychological and emotional mm-hmm. aspects of these hormones.
It does. I mean, clearly it does change mood. And it's some women say that it sort of flattens their mood, also robs them of sexual response. So,
absolutely.
So it's a bit of a problem. I mean,
it is. The birth control pills are, that easy fix that, many women, need or want. There are some women who will work on a protocol that will, again, balance hormones, dietary lifestyle change. We work with herbs and nutrients that could support the ovarian cycle, nutrients like N-acetylcysteine and lipoic acid and chromium. These all support healthy ovulation. Inositol is a simple nutrient that's used for mood issues as well. Is also a very potent initiator of ovulation. There are studies actually on the so-called menopause herb black cohosh, also doing the same kind of a job that the medication Clomid does in initiating ovulation in many of these women with polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Wow, that's really exciting.
I'm very excited about it, and whenever I hear of somebody or patients come in, we just had a patient call today. She said, "I'm not calling for myself, but for my 20-year-old daughter. They just diagnosed PCOS, and they want to put her on birth control pills, and she's never taken medication, doesn't want it. Is there anything else you could do for her?" So this is the kind of person we'd like to start working with now, because we know it's going to have such a major impact as she gets older, and we're going to do what we're here to do, is to facilitate the optimization of health.
Well, what's interesting, I find, is that by changing the diet, which has an effect on insulin, you can get rid of some of the bothersome symptoms of severe PCOS, which include hirsutism and hair loss, and you're not really giving them a medication to block their production of androgens, the male hormones that give them acne and body hair and undesirable symptoms. You're modifying the diet, and correct me if I'm wrong, but by modifying the diet, you can actually have an impact on the overproduction of the androgens, correct?
Absolutely. And in conventional and in integrative holistic literature, dietary and lifestyle change trumps every other therapy in terms of restoring ovulation. So there's nothing that beats lifestyle change that includes a healthy diet, and that healthy diet is still going to be a low-carbohydrate diet, because carbohydrates will then cause insulin to be the hormone of the moment. And insulin not only is an inflammatory hormone, but it's insulin that increases the aromatase enzyme. So it's insulin that causes some of this hormone imbalance. It's insulin that, will also affect the sex hormone binding globulin, which is a protein that binds onto estrogen and testosterone and keeps them from flooding the cells. Well, insulin drops that binding protein very, very low. So there's more of this hormone that's supposed to be just kind of traveling around in the bloodstream. Now we have this hormone jumping into every cell that it can. Restoring a healthy diet that reduces carbohydrates, eliminates simple sugars as best as possible, seems to be the way to go.
Another heartbreaking condition for many women is the condition of endometriosis. It's a severe inflammatory condition where literally blood-filled cysts may fill the pelvic area, cause enormous pain, infertility, and even digestive symptoms, bodily malaise. It's a horrible condition, and it's often treated with drugs, but then ultimately with surgery, a hysterectomy. Is there a natural approach that helps to control that?
I could say it's the same. It's
some of the similar principles, right?
Your inflammation and hormone imbalance. Endometriosis is a very unusual or mysterious kind of condition because, some women are operated on in their later years for something completely different, and they open up an abdomen and it's totally filled with endometriosis, and the woman never knew about it. And conversely, you could have somebody with excruciating pain throughout the month, and you do surgery on that person, and they may only have a couple of little spots of endometriosis. So endometriosis has always kind of been a mystery, and even as to its etiology, where it comes from, it's all theory. We have no idea whether or not there are cells in the abdominal cavity all of a sudden become totipotential. They can create uterine endometrial cells, or is it something that they call retrograde menstruation, that menstrual flow goes out of the fallopian tubes? We really don't know yet at this point. But we do know that if you control inflammation again and keep those hormones in balance, you get a handle on it. Now, there's a lot of an association with endometriosis and irritable bowel syndrome. So we know IBS can be a setup for conditions like leaky gut or increased gut permeability, and this sets off the immune system and increases the inflammatory response. 70% of the immune system sits around the gut to be able to isolate what's us from what's not us, and when we have leaky gut, instead of small amino acid particles coming through the cell, we get these large food proteins coming through the gut wall, and this sets up the other association of endometriosis, autoimmune disease.
Yeah.
So there's a major association with systemic lupus erythematosus, one of the more devastating and autoimmune conditions, and endometriosis. Another aspect of treatment of endometriosis is to assess the immune system, looking for autoimmune conditions, working and healing the leaky gut. But taking this kind of approach most of the time, again, we talk about the same anti-angiogenesis issues, so green tea extract, curcumin, these are going to be helpful. And we could reduce the symptoms of endometriosis as well. Another condition that's very similar is adenomyosis, a little bit more obscure. It's been called endometriosis of the uterus, and it's basically glandular cells mixed in with the muscular cells of the uterus, and what it causes is severe bleeding and pain. In the same age group as the transitional time, and so very often it's obscured with fibroid tumors. Is this a fibroid that's bleeding and painful, or is it adenomyosis? And these conditions seem to have some kind of similarity in certainly in how you could treat them.
Is there a potential for traditional Chinese medicine in the treatment of menstrual problems and hormonal problems for women, both herbal medicine and acupuncture? Because a lot of women report good results with these modalities.
Well, I think traditional Chinese medicine is a definite, has a great association with anything that we do. And we recommend that women continue or go to an acupuncturist. And I don't find any problem with the herbs that I use bringing in the Chinese herbs. I use a lot of castor oil packs on many of these intra-abdominal and...
Yeah, explain what that is, because that's a really helpful self-care method that women can access their instructions for that on the internet. And it's a very old-fashioned Edgar Cayce technique that I guess you in the 21st century have found helpful for your patients. Describe it.
Absolutely. It's using wool flannel and soaking it with hexane-free castor oil, and then a heat source is placed over that. So the pack is placed over the area of concern. It could be on the lower abdomen, down above the pubic bone if we're working on fibroids or endometriosis or ovarian tumors. It could be higher up on the abdomen if we're working on an intestinal issue. The heat source by Edgar Cayce actually used a heating pad, an electrical heat source. I find that the best. Some women don't like that. They use something called a hydroculator, basically a cork that is heated in a big pot. But whatever heat source you use, we use the castor oil pack with a meditation visualization exercise.
Mm-hmm. So it puts healing energy and warmth into an area that may have poor circulation, I guess.
Well, it's been theorized to be an anti-inflammatory kind of oil and have anti-inflammatory effects. Mm-hmm. It seems to have those kinds of effects, but we also use it as more of a focusing tool for our meditation visualizations, which I find to be extremely effective. And getting back to the Chinese medicine and acupuncture, when women use the castor oil packs, they're always going to be aware of thoughts or memories or ideas that may come up while they're doing their meditation visualization and the pack. And these are indicators of stored emotional energies that will then interfere with the flow of energy across the meridian. So I explained to them that acupuncture is doing the same thing. We're allowing energy to flow where was blocked before, and very often we could, you know, theorize that the normal flow of energy is being blocked by these stored, stagnating energies. So generally in the pelvis we see relationship issues that are not working out, people, jobs, the world, creative stuff. You know, many women who are trying to conceive cannot. They grow fibroids. When they do their packs, other things come up, and any of the abuse issues. Hmm. So these are the things that we see come up the most often when women use these packs, and when they work on getting rid of these stored emotional energies. To me, it's similar to needling those meridians in acupuncture, or deep tissue massage would do the same thing. There are, you know, several massage techniques that allow for stored emotional energy to be dissipated. And I think that's a very large part of healing from fibroids and any of these other conditions, is recognizing and eliminating the stored emotional energies that may be part of the creative process here.
Well, how seldom do we hear doctors addressing that, because generally the approach to stored emotional memories is to take one of the many pharmaceutical options available to blunt the negative thoughts, right?
That's all that Band-Aid approach.
Right. So, you know, clearly you're a pioneer in this field. You began in the 1980s, I believe. Your training may have been in the 70s. And when you began, you were sort of a lone wolf in the field of integrative women's care. Do you see things coming along in the present time, that there's greater recognition that these modalities play an important role in a complete way of treating women's issues?
Well, you know, they say that progress in medicine is measured one funeral at a time.
Right.
And I would say it's been very slow. You know, so as you said, I'm a director emeritus of the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine, and we do a review course and credentialing examination twice a year. And we've seen through the years, we have about 2,000 MDs and DOs right now credentialed. And we've seen through the years more and more of the subspecialties coming in and looking at what we're doing and seeing that the conventional approach is not working. So I would say there's a slow turnaround. But I was just remarking the other day, reading one of the regular OBGYN journals, you know, they're still fighting about, fetal heart rates. They're still fighting about episiotomies. They're still fighting about forceps or no forceps. I mean, these are the same discussions we were having back in the 70s.
Yeah.
So I have to say, in terms of obstetrics, even though there's occasionally a glimmer when you see an article on preeclampsia, that devastating high blood pressure condition in pregnancies, you see an article where they say, well, maybe it's low antioxidant levels, and then it gets buried and you don't see it again. You know, so I would say that, you know, in medicine things are changing slowly, but the old guard doesn't want to kind of give up too quickly.
So our intelligent medicine call to action for today, you are practicing. Fortunately for those of us in the New York region, you took a brief sojourn in the capital area in Maryland, I believe, and now your practice is back in the suburbs of New York City. Tell us about how listeners can access your practice, and can patients from other parts of the country or other parts of the world come see you?
Well, we do see people from all over the world, all over the country and all over the world. You know, many of them come in with my book, Healing Fibroids. They're trying to avoid hysterectomy. We're located in Rye, New York. We're a 30-minute train ride from Grand Central. It's a lovely town. Patients love coming up from the city and walking around town. We're one block from the station, so it's very convenient. Our office number I could give you is area code 914-967-1630. And patients can also assess information on the practice from the website, which is drallen.com. The word doctor spelled out, Allen, Allan.com. We're happy to talk to patients and, give them a few minutes of consultation time if they have questions about what it is that we do. And as I said before, we're basically in business to facilitate optimized health.
Well, absolutely. And you, over the years, have been a valuable referral source for me with some of my more difficult and challenging patients with gynecological issues. So I'll vouch for your expertise for sure. And you also have been a great teacher and mentor to not just me, but literally thousands of doctors who have heard your lectures and watched your videos over the years, because you were very generous with your knowledge that you have an outreach to academics and to medical conferences. So if you get an opportunity, those of you health professionals out there, if Dr. Allan Morshausky is lecturing in your area, be sure to catch his latest presentation. Also, the book Healing Fibroids, A Doctor's Guide to a Natural Cure, lays out in greater detail many of the principles that we've touched on briefly during today's podcast. So I want to thank you for joining us.
No, thank you very much, Ron.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.